Good News in the City is a series of conversations about civic and spiritual issues in Boston with people who are taking action to create a more beloved community. It is produced by Trinity Church in the City of Boston, a congregation of the Episcopal Church and a house of prayer and hope for all people.
This is Rainey Dankel, Associate Rector at Trinity Church. Part of my responsibility is working in the areas of social justice with parishioners and other partners around the city. We have a series of conversations planned that help to bring to light some of the issues that we are working on. And today we're focusing on the issue of affordable housing, particularly in Boston. Boston has the third highest housing costs of all the cities in the United States. We're behind only New York City and San Francisco in the cost of housing. The average home value right now in Boston is $500,000, and the average rent paid is $2,400 a month. That means $30,000 a year of your income is needed to rent the average apartment in Boston. And to help us understand that better, we're joined by Kenzie Bach, who's a parishioner at Trinity Church and someone who's very active in the whole issue of affordable housing in Boston. Welcome, Kenzie.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So I know you're active in the Greater Boston Interfaith Organization, and I think GBIO is a place where you've been able to join with others to look at the whole issue of affordable housing.
Yeah, so GBIO as a community organizing group is very focused on the idea that we can only really organize together for change in our community if it's coming out of the things that people really feel passionately about, the things that move people, that are worrying them or that excite them. Churches in the communities of color, there's a real concern about gentrification, about people getting pushed out, and the fact that the churches see that very viscerally, right? Somebody's on the vestry and then suddenly they've left, right? Or the kid's in the choir and then they're gone because they can't afford to stay there. And especially since a bunch of these churches have been hubs for community for multiple generations, and we know that we have huge racial wealth disparities in this city. We've got in Massachusetts, the largest racial gap in home buying in the country. I think people don't realize that. So anyways, the point is just to say that a lot of issues around housing were bubbling up, and GBIO wants to build its power around issues that really matter to the members. And so that's kind of how we got to housing. The mayor's new administration produced this report, Housing a Changing City. So GBIO, this plan came out and GBIO read it, and the plan is based on the Metropolitan Area Planning Council had said, okay, this is how many new units of housing we need to build in the greater Boston area in order to even just keep up with demand, to keep those numbers from going even higher. I mean, the thing is, it's not really a plan for getting them substantially lower, but it's at least trying to halt the rise. And then Boston took its segment of that, that overall number, which Boston's share would be 53,000.
53,000 units.
53,000 new units.
Yeah.
Yeah, by 2030. So that's quite a substantial number. And the plan's pretty ambitious, and the plan acknowledges that there's a whole bunch of different categories of housing that we need, that we need some luxury housing, that we've got a big problem when it comes to middle-income housing in the city, that it's very hard for people, like, as they maybe do get a good job, make a good salary, to then put that together into a down payment. You know, once they start to have kids, they start finding themselves thinking, I can't afford us to live in the city. And that's a problem. If we want to have, you know, whether like teachers, firefighters, like janitors, everybody who works in the city, if we want to have those folks also be able to live in the city, then that's not being able to build a sort of family life in the city is a big problem. But also that there's a huge need in low income. And I think, like, just for some perspective on those numbers you gave us earlier, right, the 30,000 number for a year. So the Boston Redevelopment Authority, which has actually just been renamed, but when it was still the Boston Redevelopment Authority about 6 months ago, released a report saying that half of Boston workers make 35,000 or less. So those numbers don't add up, right? And we're seeing a reflection of those two things together, which is that a huge number of low-income people in this city spend more than half their income on housing. And we know that when you're spending 60, 70, 80% of your income on housing, that that money comes out of the food budget. It comes out of the health budget. We see kids having worse like health outcomes because of these things. And it cuts down your ability to save, to build up capital. You're not going to be able to start a small business, certainly, right? I mean, your ability to pay for education, to get yourself a better credential is in jeopardy. So it just childcare. I mean, honestly, childcare plus housing together crowd almost everything else out of a lot of low-income budgets. And so I think that's important that when we're talking about housing and housing cost, we remember that we're talking about the share of the pie that it takes and the ways in which it can crowd everything else out. GBIO read the plan, which said, okay, we want this kind of market rate housing, this amount of new middle income, this amount of new low-income housing, senior housing, some empty housing for vacant, like you need a certain vacancy rate. Right now, our vacancy rate in the city of Boston is really, really low. And that creates friction in the market because even if in theory you have an apartment that's free, if in fact, like there, like nothing is staying free long, it just makes
available.
It really hard.
Yeah,
it's very hard
right.
for people to search for it to match with people's start times, et cetera. So they had all these different components. And as we looked at the plan, we were like, wait, but hang on, you're substantially short in the amount of money you would need by this report's admission to do the low income piece of the target.
Yeah.
So I think most people in Boston know that we've been going through a building boom and that we're actually hitting or exceeding the market rate new production targets. And I think you talk to a lot of people in the city and they say, oh, it's growth, we're growing, everything's, you know, there's lots of building happening. But there's a real justice and equity concern about the fact that the portion of the plan that's about low income housing, it isn't happening at the same rate.
But something even more hopefully beneficial and long-term is also on the horizon that we want to focus on now, and that's the Community Preservation Act, which is a state law that enables cities and towns in Massachusetts to vote for themselves a surcharge on property tax to create a pot of money that's to be used for affordable housing, creation of open space, and historic preservation. And a number of cities have done that, but Boston has sort of been behind the curve on that.
Yeah, so the state created this law 15 years ago that said, okay, you know, a lot of communities have particular projects, particular things that come up that they really want to be able to act on, often without maybe necessarily seeing that the exactly what opportunity is coming down the pipeline, particularly in the realms of affordable housing, parks and open spaces, and historic preservation, like you said. And so they created this option for cities and towns to say, okay, we're going to raise a nominal surcharge, and it's genuinely small. So in Boston, it would be the median house value is $500,000, so $500,000. And someone who owned a $500,000 home in the city of Boston would pay an additional $24 in property tax
per year.
And then when you put that skin in the game as a city and town, and the only way you can do that is through a ballot initiative, you say, okay, we're in. We want to, you know, focus on these priorities, affordable housing, parks, and historic preservation. Then the state gives you some matching money. And there's actually a trust fund that's funded with the fees that everyone in the state of Massachusetts pays when they register a deed. Now we're going into the good news piece. And the good news piece is that we've got it on the ballot this November. It's question five. It's the last question on the ballot. It's at the back of the ballot, the back of the second page. So everyone who votes in Boston who's listening needs to get to the end of their ballot, the very back. And that's going to be yes on five. It's very important to us to be at the table because, I mean, one of the things, I mean, like I said, where we're coming from on this is that we have a bunch of congregations that are experiencing real displacement worries. There's a real interest from our side, both in funding for affordable rental housing, but also in some support for affordable home ownership. And actually, we've got cool examples of nearby communities that have used the Community Preservation Act funds in both those ways. So Cambridge has been using their CPA funds to help first-time home buyers in the city of Cambridge who take a home buyer course, who often are in a position where they've got the money to service a mortgage, but the down payment might just be a little bit beyond their reach. And so, you know, Cambridge, it's not going to put a huge sum of money into buying one home for one family. But if it can put a small sum in and help get that family, you know, rooted in Cambridge and building equity, that's a valuable thing. And they've been doing that in Cambridge with their CPA money for a while. And then Somerville, which got CPA more recently, is with their money, they're actually they've managed to get they've used the money to get a line of credit, which lets them compete with cash speculators who are buying up affordable rental properties. And these are sort of naturally affordable rental properties. You know, they haven't upgraded it to luxury status, and they're not looking to get top dollar out of it. They're just looking to, you know, meet a certain expectation of covering the mortgage and making a little extra. And then you've got those families are selling, and the cash speculators see it as a chance. Okay, let's buy it. Let's upgrade this, and let's like really upgrade the rents. And so Somerville's buying properties that actually pay for themselves right now. Like, you can keep them at those rents, so they're not deeply subsidized rents. They're just kind of enough to cover, like in the pro forma, they cover the cost of maintaining the building, et cetera. So they're not buying like massive fixer-uppers. They're buying houses, good housing stock.
And with existing renters.
With existing renters. And they're just locking in those rents. And that's their, and the Somerville Community Corporation is administering this, but it's funded through the city's CPA funds.
So, Kinsey, you grew up in Boston, which, so it seems to me that your idea of what a city is and how neighborhoods work would be very much shaped by that experience. And now you're sort of back here at after being away for your education as a young adult. Tell me a little bit about how does it look now, maybe in comparison to what you grew up with, and how does that relate to this whole issue of affordable housing?
I came back within the last year to Boston, and one of the things that I noticed was that in areas that I'd grown up with, was very familiar with, was that who was able to live there was changing. And I could see that in front of me. And I thought about the community of people who were there for me in my neighborhood, even growing up. So like, you know, somebody who paints houses, somebody who's a social worker, somebody, just like a bunch of good middle-class jobs. And lots of these people, you know, kept a copy of our key in their house and looked out for me. And just seeing that sort of the ability to do that now, unless your family had a bunch of money that could help you out, is just not sort of doable. And even for me coming back home, I mean, I'm like very fortunate, but I landed back home, right, staying with my parents. And there was no chance that I was going to land back in Bay Village if it wasn't, you know, with my own income. Like, that just wasn't viable. So, but I don't think of myself as one of the people who's being displaced. I do think though that I'm aware of that changing kind of nature of a city, and it really concerns me. And now I think there's been such a renaissance in Boston and such an effort to build up a lot of its institutions and make it like a wonderful place to be. And to me, for that to then mean that it isn't a place where everybody gets to live would just be very sad. And it would be sad because I love Boston so much.
And I think would go counter to some of the images that we have from our scriptures that talk about, you know, the city being a place. Well, there's a phrase in Isaiah that says, seek the welfare of the city, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. So that there's very much a sense of our individual thriving is bound up with a communal sense of thriving. And so when the gaps keep widening between those who are thriving and those who are not, you know, it's a spiritual issue. It's a disruption to the kind of living in community that that our faith holds up as kind of the ideal.
Absolutely. And I was so struck. I was leading one of the Bible study groups that we had last year. And at the very end, we got to Revelations, as you do if you read through the whole New Testament. And there's that image of the city of God, and the gates are always open, right? And people are coming and going. And I just think about the fact that when we get such relief and joy from that image of a city of God where the gates are held open for us, the idea that we're stewarding our own cities in ways that don't mirror that is really troubling to me. And I don't think it has to be that way. And it's not just that I think that it's wrong. It's also that it feels broken.
Well, my experience with GBIO has been similar to yours, Kinsey, and that is that it feels great to be working together with people of faith around issues. And you know, we don't have to debate dogma or agree on every point about religious faith, but we find those areas where we do have common ground and that we can work together with an explicit understanding that this is part of our faith journey, and we don't have to hide that or, you know, try to, you know, put that in the closet, so to speak. So just to remind us, the real urgency right now is, and the good news is that Boston has an opportunity to put some real money into the issue of affordable housing as well as parks and historic preservation by supporting the Community Preservation Act. And even as we speak, people can be voting because it's early voting time in Boston. So help us remember the facts that we're looking at, Kinsey.
Yes, please. If you're a Boston voter, when you go to the polls and there's early voting, as Rainey said, from October 24th to November 4th, and then Election Day is, of course, Tuesday, November 8th, go to the end of the ballot, to the last question at the back of the ballot, vote yes on 5. And then I would say stay tuned after Election Day. Both in terms of, you know, we're going to be, GBIO is focusing on what does this money go to? Let's make sure that, you know, it's really addressing this low-income housing problem. But also, you know, I was talking about those folks from outside of Boston who are helping us on this, and some of the folks listening to this probably aren't Boston voters. And I would say part of why we're working on it together is that, you know, the next step may be the legislature, right? Maybe it's, why don't you beef up the trust fund? Right now, that would be a tough sell for Boston politicians because Boston's not getting any of the money from it. But if Boston's in, then we're joining. Newton's already in. Cambridge is already in. So, you know, if we're all in this together, we can say, hey, can we get some more for this? But also we can just build on that, build on this community of concern about where people are going to live in our city, how they're going to afford it, how there's going to be enough for them to flourish in other aspects of their life. And we can sort of say together what's next. But step one is yes on 5, bag of the ballot. So I'll be a broken record on that.
Thank you, Kinsey. We've been talking with Kinsey Bach, a member of Trinity Church, who's very active with the Greater Boston Interfaith Organization, GBIO, working very hard to get the Community Preservation Act approved in Boston, as 161 other cities and towns in Massachusetts have done, to create a fund for affordable housing, parks and open space, and historic preservation. And if you're listening and wanting to know how to get involved, we'd love to have you join GBIO efforts here at Trinity Church. Kinsey Bach and other parishioners are involved in that. If that's a way to for you to come into working together with people around issues of affordable housing and some other issues that are also GBIO is also involved in, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Rainey Dankel. It's been my privilege to be talking today with Kinsey Bach and learning more about what's happening in Boston around the issues of affordable housing, part of Good News in the City.
You've heard about Good News in the City. If you want more information, visit us online at trinitychurchboston.org. If you're interested in getting involved, send us an email at goodnews@trinitychurchboston.org.